Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Aaron Fentress is one of my favorite people. Former football player at Portland State, writer at the Oregonian. He left the Oregonian to go to work for a variety of other entities. But like Al Pacino, he tried to get out! And we pulled him back in. He's covering the Blazers. He's covering the Ducks. He's a collector of sports cards, memorabilia. He's opinionated. He's outspoken. He's a father. He's a husband. He's a friend. He's got a blind spot here or there. We all do. For example, I think he thinks Michael Jackson is better than Prince. But he also would probably agree that Michael Jordan is greater than LeBron. So he's not all bad. Aaron Fentress joining us now. How are you, man?
Wow, quite the introduction. And yes, of course Michael Jackson's better than Prince. What are you talking about, man?
Have you ever had a better intro in all the radio interviews you've ever done?
I don't know. I might record that one and send it out to everyone and say, repeat this.
I love it. Hey, I'm just going to pepper you with a variety of things. We'll do it like it's a game show. We'll do it like a game show. We won't have all the bells and whistles. There's no studio audience. You're not getting a prize at the end, but we will pepper you in a way that I think will be entertaining, but also sort of demonstrate the range of things that you can talk about. How about that?
Oh, my goodness. What if I don't know something? I have to fake it.
Then you just say pass. You go pass, and we move on to the next thing. Let's start with Ty Thompson, Anthony Brown Jr. I've been defending Anthony Brown Jr. Am I wrong to defend him?
What's your defense in terms of just that he's fine or that they don't have a better option? Like, what? Give me context.
I believe in Joe Moorhead, Mario Cristobal. I think there's a reason Ty Thompson's not playing. I've heard whispers about Thompson's arm's great. He's going to be great one day, but he makes mistakes in practices and the coaches don't fully trust him yet. Anthony Brown, I'm willing to dismiss the performance against Stanford. His coordinator wasn't there. His center wasn't there. He made a couple of bad plays that were glaring, but there was so much else wrong in that game that shouldn't have mattered as much. And by the way, he beat Ohio State.
So my take on Brown is the same as it was last year. I couldn't understand why people were calling for him over Shuck because I didn't believe Brown was going to necessarily be better than Shuck. And Shuck was in his first year as a starter. It was a COVID year. It was kind of weird. He led the conference in passing efficiency ultimately. And when the Ducks signed Brown, when I was working for The Athletic, and I went and did like a film review of him, and I watched several games of his at BC, and my assessment was that, you know, he'll be mature, you know, he'll be a leader. He's accurate in the short game, but he doesn't go downfield that much. And his accuracy, even in the short game, can be kind of iffy. That's why he completed 55% of his passes then. So that was sort of my feeling of what he was after 4 years. Like, he was there for 4 years. So he comes to Oregon, now he's starting. He's the exact same guy. Like, to expect that he was going to be great all of a sudden never made sense to me, and he's not great. He's solid. He's okay. The problem is they don't have a dominant run game like they had back in the day, like Darren Thomas, who was good, not great, but he had a great running game, so that enhanced the passing game that he was operating. He doesn't have that. The run game is solid, but not dominant like back in the days when he rushed for 300 yards per game. But Ducks fans are spoiled. They went from Mariota, who was a savant, right, to Vernon Adams, then a little hiccup, then Herbert. So that's a great little run of quarterback play, and Herbert and Mariota work as young quarterbacks. The huge difference, though, is that the year they closed practices for good was 2011. And that was the year Mariota redshirted, so we could not go watch him. If you remember back in the day, you remember how I was. I'd be at practice, like I was just watching all the recruits, right, picking my guys. And, oh, I like that guy. I like this guy. You couldn't do that anymore. But I kept hearing over and over again, this Mariota kid, this Mariota kid, this Mariota kid. I was even told that had Darren Thomas gotten injured in 2012 and been out for the season, that Mariota might have been the starter over Bennett. That's how great Mariota was while he was redshirted. In 2016, Everyone had it pegged out. Prue Kupp, Travis Johnson, and Terry Wilson competing for the backup. And then like a week into the camp, you started hearing, better watch out for this Herbert kid. This Herbert kid. Someone referred to him as Herbiota to me because he was like Herbert, or excuse me, like Mariota, and being, again, intelligent, right? People were telling me, dude, this kid just gets it. He just gets it. And he has a rocket arm. And he's 6'5", 6'6", right? I'm not hearing any of that regarding Thompson or Butterfield. As a matter of fact, I'm hearing the exact opposite. So I started hearing this stuff, and then I started asking other people what they were hearing, and they were telling me the same thing. And then people I know who have sources were reaching out to me when they see my tweets or see my commentary on Talking Ducks and be like, hey, I'm hearing the same stuff. Oh, like, this is just being repetitive at multiple different layers of different people who would be in the know. The bottom line is the kid's just not ready. He's a true freshman. And the problem is people see the five-star recruit, like number two ranked quarterback in the nation. He must just be a phenom. He might be talent-wise, but mentally he's just not there. The things I'm hearing, like you just said, he can't run the offense. Like, he can't check in and out of certain things. The run game would be hurt because he can't really check in the right running play all the time. He doesn't process the passing plays versus the coverages he's seeing quick enough. So if they put him, you'd have to think Mario's an idiot if he's watching this guy be like Herbert in practice but won't play him. So either Mario's dumb and should be fired tomorrow, or he and Moorhead know what they're doing and they know this kid's not ready. So I keep seeing fans complain and cry about this so often as if they're at practice. Like, show some respect for the people who are actually maybe at practice and watching film, and just let Ty Thompson develop in his own time.
Can Travis Dye be a 25, 27-touch guy, or are you concerned there?
As they start playing better defenses, I'm concerned there because he hasn't been that guy before. He's not really built like that. We did see, though, LaMichael James and Kenyon Barner be that type of guy at about the same size. But they ran differently to me. Like, LaMichael thought he was 6'2", 220, the way he played, right? He didn't get the memo. He never looked at the roster and saw, oh, you're 5'9", 195. He didn't play like that. And he was just so amazingly tough. It's still amazing to me that the guy carried the ball 770 times and rushed for 5,000 yards at 5'9", 195. But Ty just doesn't feel like that type of guy. But maybe I'm doing him a disjustice because we just haven't seen it, right? But if I'm the Ducks, you got to find someone else you can put in there who can get, you know, the same yards Dye would get at least some of the time and reduce the pounding he's going to take. Cal didn't really get many good licks on him because things were just wide open and Dye ran well. But he's going to get more hits as they go. But my thing is, like, when in history have the Ducks ever had a depth issue at running back? I mean, I remember in 2016 at Nebraska, Freeman goes out in the first quarter, and Tony Brooks James, Kenai Benoit, and Taj Griffin combined for 300 yards rushing. Like, so I would expect there's got to be some backs with all the recruiting they've been doing that they could throw out there, like Cardwell or Benson, to spell Dye a bit.
Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian with us. Aaron, as we move on to round two of this game show, let's talk about the defense. Have you seen enough of this defense to know that it can be good? For me, Kayvon Thibodeau coming and going, in and out, out a quarter, out a half, rolled ankle. Yeah. I haven't had a chance to really see this defense.
I know. The fact that he's been in and out, the fact that they lost Flo after a 14-tackle performance, and then Bennett Williams, my God. He had a breakout game against Cal. He is an NFL-caliber talent. There's no doubt in my mind he will be in the NFL in some capacity. But he gets hurt in a freak accident in practice. Right? It's just ridiculously sad in the way that we're not going to ever see this defense be what it could have been on paper. And the offenses are about to get better. And they've looked just okay, I think, against some pretty mediocre offenses. I mean, Cal's offense is not good. Stanford's offense is not good. Arizona's is bad, and Arizona had a chance to win it in the fourth quarter. I never thought they were, but they were down one possession with the ball. Cal made it inside the five, right, to tie the game, and Stanford beat them. So I think things are going to be tough down there. I think this week, UCLA, I would be shocked if they don't score in the 30s, just with the type of offense they have and the situation with the Ducks. But Kayvon is a one-man wrecking crew against a team that refuses to double him. I don't think Chip is going to be foolish enough to let that guy go one-on-one with his tackles, or even when he slides inside with his guards. I think they'll do a good job keeping him from disrupting the game and rack up some points and yards, but we're never going to know truly what this defense could have been given all the injuries.
The boos at the stadium What do you make of that? Why are the fans booing? This is a team that has one loss, ranked in the top 10. People are booing, Aaron. Are they spoiled rotten?
They've been spoiled rotten for a while. And when I say they, I mean those who are booing. Not all of the fan base is like that, obviously. So I'm not talking about the entire fan base. I think it's mostly the Nouveau fan base. People who have been fans since maybe Mariota or maybe a little bit before then, who are a little bit spoiled about the success. And then, of course, the expectations with Mario Cristobal's recruiting classes, which is he's had several top 10 classes. So you're expecting to see some great teams, and you're not necessarily seeing it on the field right now because the defense, even though they've had injuries, is up and down, and the offense is pretty, you know, average. It's above average, respectful to the rest of the world right now, but it's way below average compared to what Oregon offenses were in the past, right? So that all meshed together with a mediocre quarterback is causing people to be frustrated. My thing is, I just have never believed in booing college kids. Now, some people say, oh, they're on scholarship, oh, they're over 18, blah, blah, blah. I just can't find it in my heart if a kid's struggling to, and he has a, you know, a chemistry test on Monday, I'm booing him. Like, you know, if he's playing, like, there's no one's more upset about not performing well and losing a football game than the player. And so when you boo them, you're almost saying, you're doing something bad to me by not playing well, and I expect you to play. They expect more from each other than anyone possibly could, and they all have each other's back, and the coaches and players are going to have each other's back. The fans who are true fans to me are also going to have their back, and fans have to be able to accept losses gracefully. Like, you can't just expect to win all the time, and if you don't, you're going to boo college kids. Doesn't make sense. If a $20 million receiver drops a touchdown in an NFL game, you want to boo him, fine. But don't boo the kid, you know, on scholarship who's going to be haunted by that drop for years.
What about if it's Kayvon Thibodeau? He's got, you know, $500,000 in endorsements. Can we boo a little? Can we boo under our breath?
I think the NILs do jump into this a little bit. But, again, what exactly are you booing? To me, lack of effort, right? I think if there's blatant laziness or lack of effort, I think maybe you can justify it a little bit if it's a star player. Like, I'm trying to think of an example, but like, let's say you have a cornerback who you know is really good, but you see him out there and he's dogging and a receiver runs right by him and scores. Like, that's like, whoa, what are you doing? But if they're playing hard and giving their all, it's nothing. That's all that should matter. Because, again, they're giving it the old college try, right? So show them some respect. Here's the other thing, too, that bothers me. They're out there actually going through the physical hardship of playing football. You're sitting in the stands eating a hot dog and drinking a beer. How are you going to boo them for their effort when if you went out on the field, you know, you and I have talked about this before, you know, fans or media versus players and criticism. Criticism is fine, but booing to me is disrespectful, and that's different. And I think you should respect the effort that's being put forth on the field.
Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian is our guest. Anthony Brown Jr., while I've supported him, I don't support him on this front. Only after the Ohio State game did he show up to do a post-game news conference. He was requested after the Cal game. Sports information at Oregon went to him. He declined the interview request. I think he should come out and do some interviews. I think it would actually help him. Like, my advice to him would be, like, talk to us about what that's like and what you're hearing, because I think it makes you more human.
Yeah, I could see. I don't know. Did he ever give a reason as to why he didn't come out?
No, just nothing. But yeah. Oregon said, we asked him, we tried, he just didn't want to do it.
Yeah, so if he's hearing the criticism and he's hearing the boos, quite frankly, I don't blame him. I forget these people. But, again, it's a small percentage of the fan base. Most of the fan base are not booing him. Most of the fan base, I believe, gets it. And I think if you're the quarterback, you do every availability that you're asked to do. You're the quarterback. You're the face of the team. You're the leader of the team. And even if things are going poorly, you're the guy who's supposed to go out there and answer to them and talk about them and take the bullets for the rest of your team and deflect, right? And even if it's not all your fault, take the blame and be a leader. And so, yeah, I Herbert, early on in his young career, would duck out of some media stuff, not after games, but like during the week. A couple of times he did that in 2017. I remember me and a couple other people driving from Portland, knowing that this is the day Herbert talks, and then him sneaking off into practice and avoiding us. Uncool. I think I tweeted about it, and then a couple people came after me. They thought I was going after Herbert. I'm like, wait a minute. He's the star quarterback. He stiffed us. we did. You know, I drove 3.5 hours round trip, and he stiffed me. Yeah, I'm gonna criticize it. So yeah, the quarterback should always make himself available to the media.
Derek Anderson did it once upon a time at Oregon State. I think he threw three or four picks in a game against Fresno State, and he went and got on the bus and did not talk to media. And I said, "What the hell? Like, you know, just it's not like we're gonna kill you over it. Nobody's gonna eat you. Like, we're just here to ask you some questions and, you know, help us understand it." But I get it. It becomes personal. Let's shift to the Blazers. We're in the bonus round now with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. Opening night, not a good first half. They let a guy, Harrison Barnes, go bananas. Massive overreaction, probably myself included, but I literally was like, here we go. Here we go. Help us understand one night of basketball, four quarters of basketball from the Blazers. What did you see that you didn't like? What did you see that you liked?
Okay, so what I didn't like, but what I'm giving time to develop is the defense. I think you're dealing with a team that was 29th. A lot of bad habits you got to fix, like especially from Dame and CJ. It's a mindset to play defense. And Norman Powell talked about it again today. I asked him, he's been asked this before. I'm like, you played for a championship defense in Toronto. Do you see, or and I said, how far are you guys away from that still? And he said, oh, we're far. Right? But he said he sees the path. Like, we're on the right path, meaning that we're holding each other accountable. We're trying. We're trying to get better at it. They're just struggling with some second and third rotation moves. Like, they might rotate to the first shooter, but they're not quite figuring out all the second and third options at a high rate. Everyone has said that that's going to take time. So I'm going to give them probably 20 games before I really, you know, if there's bottom five after 20 games, then I think it's time to be like, okay, this is just broken. Like, this isn't working. You have to see improvement. But you have to give it some time. And Harrison Barnes was unconscious. If a guy's unconscious, there's nothing you can do in the NBA when a guy's red hot, right? There's only so much you can do when a guy goes off. So defensively, yes, we need to see more from them. Offensively, what I love, John, oh, my God, I love this. They were attacking the basket almost like it was 2000, right? They weren't jacking up threes left and right. They only shot, I think, 13 threes in the first half. They averaged 41 threes a game last year. You saw Anthony Simons do a hesitation, go down and dunk on somebody. Another time he took it into the lane and did like a Kareem skyhook almost. McCollum was just going right at people to get into the lane and make shots. And that's what Billups wants, if he believes if they get good at the paint touches and getting into the paint, getting to the basket, and then the defense collapses, you kick it back out. They got seven guys on the team who should shoot 37% from three or better, but they weren't falling last night. I hate where the NBA is going, where you see some teams shooting 45-53 some nights. To me, that's boring. I don't know how you feel about it.
Boring.
I love ball movement. I love player movement. Creating the goal should be to attack the basket first and then take the three second, and that's how they're trying to play. So I loved watching that. I definitely see the potential down offense for what they become. How often is Damian Lillard going to go 0-for-9 from three? Like, if he goes 3-for-9, which is below average for him, they win that game. So I think offensively they're on the right track. Defensively, they have a lot to prove.
Does this roster need something else? Meaning, you got Ben Simmons, whose trade value is dropping. Blazers, you know.
Enron.
Yeah. Is there a point where it makes a lot of sense to go, all right, CJ, you've played lights out, but we got to try something new. Simmons is available, or are you a little bit skittish about Ben Simmons right now?
Man, I've been on the Ben Simmons bandwagon since even before the playoff mishap. I think I wrote something about that before then. I think he's just an amazing talent. He's just kind of a petulant little child. But I think Damian and Billups, if there's a player-coach combination in the NBA that could turn him around, I think it could be those two, or maybe like a Kawhi and a Tyronn Lue. But I think Lillard, as mature and as much of a leader as he is, and then Billups with his background as a player and a point guard, I think those two could turn Ben Simmons around. For me, three-guard lineup, not winning the title. So if the goal is to win the title, you're still in, we need to make a trade mode. They're going to be good. I still think they have a chance to win 50 games based on the things I said before in terms of winning 42 last year out of 72. Defense gets better, blah, blah, blah. But if the goal is to contend, you have to get a little bit bigger, get a little longer, improve the defense. Ben Simmons does all of that. And so, yeah, I I would explore a deal for him and roll the dice. But the Blazers are hesitant, and for good reason, because CJ's a really good player. He carried them last night. If not for CJ, they get blown out last night. He was on. I think it was 14 for 24, 30-something points. He's a dynamic scorer, liability on defense. But I can see where they're hesitant to go from a really mature guy who loves Portland to a really immature guy who has said, allegedly, reportedly, that he doesn't want to play in Portland. That would give me pause. But just from a roster standpoint, you add Ben Simmons into the middle of this defensively, you're going to be a top 10 defense overnight, I believe. And he's such a great facilitator. You have all these three-point shooters. He can score inside. You're going to be a better basketball team as far as I'm concerned.
Aaron Fentress, you're the best. I appreciate you. Thank you, man.
Thanks for having me, man. Talk to you later.
There he is. Variety of topics with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. Leave it here. Coming up, Anna will join the show. And who knows where it goes after that. Anna stepped into the studio. Brace yourselves. What do you think when I say that?
I think you're being dramatic.
That you think it's dramatic?
Yeah.
I never know where the show's going to go. I don't mean that as a bad thing. It's just the show. Brace yourself. Like it's a roller derby.
Buckle up.
No, I'm not stealing Willie Taggart's lines.
Oh, is that a Willie Taggart line?
I love recently there was a story that I think the Oregonian wrote about a kid with the last name Taggart.
Yeah.
Who Oregon was recruiting and made a commitment.
Oh.
And in the story, I don't know if this is necessary. The reporter wrote, not related to Willie Taggart. And I thought, okay, I was curious about it.
Yeah.
I guess it was necessary if I was curious about it.
Exactly. Come on. I think that's responsible journalism when you address that.
Yeah, but yeah, not a...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.